Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights, a podcast brought to you by the Society of Entrepreneurs and Century Wealth Management.
In this podcast, we'll have a series of interviews with accomplished business owners and entrepreneurs in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm Pearson Crutcher.
And I'm Jay Healy. Pearson runs the Society of Entrepreneurs. It's a membership organization founded to promote Memphis entrepreneurship and provide education and resources to business owners.
Jay Healy is the founder and president of Century Wealth Management, an entrepreneurial firm that can serve as your family's CFO. There are so many great entrepreneurs in Memphis, and their stories need to be told. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights.
Edith Kelly Green grew up in Oxford, Mississippi, and graduated from Ole Miss with an accounting degree before she started her career at FedEx.
After she retired from FedEx, she invested in the Lenny's franchise and grew that franchise significantly.
In our conversation, she'll share how important mentorship, education, and giving back to the community is.
Enjoy our interview with Edith Kelly Green. Good morning. We're so excited to have Edith Kelly Green with us this morning. Edith, I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I guess why don't we just get the ball rolling? What I would love to do is to find out a little bit about you, your background, where you grew up. Let's talk about your background first, and then we'll come up to the career.
I was born and raised in Oxford, Mississippi. I grew up with my grandmother. My grandmother raised me. My grandmother worked on campus at the Ole Miss campus as a maid, and I used to go to work with her. She was very high on education, although she only had a sixth grade education, but that was very important to her. I was kind of the lazy person in terms of physical work, so if I had to study, she let me do that because of her high esteem for education. And so I graduated from Oxford High School, ended up going to Ole Miss a few years after the school had been integrated. I had a major in accounting, no idea how I got to accounting because I knew nothing about it as I was growing up. Of course, we didn't discuss business, Wall Street journals, and those kind of things in my house. But something guided me in that direction, and I ended up graduating from Ole Miss with a degree in accounting in 3 years, and then moved up north to Memphis, which is where I've been ever since.
So when you were in school, did you major in business and then took an accounting class and just knew then that you liked it, or how did you end up there?
My freshman year at Ole Miss, actually, I started the second summer session. I had a major in political science. And by the way, in my next life, I'm coming back as an attorney. I'm a closet law and order attorney as it is. But nevertheless, some reason I changed to accounting. I have no clue how I got to accounting. I will say I did fairly well in math. I like numbers. And in fact, my counselor, high school counselor, suggested that I become a math teacher, primarily because teachers and nurses perhaps were about the only thing that black women did in a professional manner. I couldn't be a teacher then. I can't be a teacher now, although I love teachers and really appreciate what they do, but that was just not my calling. So accounting is kind of numbers, and most people think it's all numbers, but it seriously is not that much numbers. I always try to get people to get around that fear of numbers. It was kind of akin to numbers, and I just say, good Lord, directed me, because otherwise I cannot tell you how I got into accounting. I'm sure I could even spell accounting when I was a senior in high school, had no clue.
So post-college, what was your career path?
One, major in accounting, then your desire is, if you can, to go to work for what was then the big eight public accounting firms. You've heard the names, Arthur Andersen, no longer around, Pricewaterhouse, Deloitte. Now there's four of them, so it's the big four. I ended up going to work with what was then Touche Ross, one of the big eight firms, now known as Deloitte, merged with Deloitte. So I was lucky, blessed enough to get a job offer coming out of Ole Miss to come up to Memphis to work for what is now Deloitte, what is called public accounting, the firms that go and audit public companies, not only public companies, but go out and do audits. They have a tax division, they have a consulting division, but I was on the audit team going to different companies to do audits, which is attesting to the validity of the numbers that are in annual reports or that are reported to the public to ensure investors and shareholders that the company is on the up and up.
And then from there, I know you went to go work for a pretty big company in Memphis. So how'd you end up there?
Well, in public accounting, about year four, you say, am I going to continue working this hard? Do I want to be a partner? And if that's not the case, it's time to move on to something else. And quite a few folks who now have jobs in corporate America started in public accounting, and either with firms they audited, they moved over into the accounting division of various companies. Well, I heard about this little company that carried boxes. This was 1977. Didn't know anything. I didn't know the name Federal Express. But someone connected me and said, go out for an interview, which I did go out for an interview with Jack Roberts, who was the manager of general accounting there. I guess they were cubicles, but half of them were falling down. There were holes in the carpet, boxes serving as desks. But it was an environment, exciting environment. And I guess part of it was because it was an airline. Even though they carried packages, you know, we always get excited about airplanes. So I went to work for Federal Express. That's what it was called then in 1977 as a senior accountant. And it was a great time to be at FedEx, because there was so much to do, and it didn't take a whole lot to stand out or just go work in that little bit of extra. And my grandmother always taught me, work hard, make sure you're giving more than you're getting. And I did that. And so if you do that and other people aren't doing it, it's pretty easy to stand out. In fact, I always tell my kids and other kids now, most people are mediocre. They're going to do the basics to get along. It doesn't take much to rise above that and to be the person that gets pointed out, because you do just that little bit of extra. And there was so much to do, and my work ethic, you know, not bragging necessarily, I do believe in hard work. I think people ask me, how do you get ahead? I think hard work is still one of the basic ways that one gets ahead wherever you are. I mean, there are a lot of other things too. But there was so much to be done at FedEx, and not a lot of people to tell you what all those things are. So if you saw things that needed to be done and did them, the company was very generous in recognition. And when I started, we were still flying Falcons, maybe 25,000 packages a night. So I got to see the company grow. It was just really an exciting time with exciting change. And FedEx will probably be my first entrees into entrepreneurship. It's obviously certainly a company that started with that in mind by Fred Smith, of course.
What's your employee number?
6307. Wow. Something we never forget, I guess. People ask me that, and I've never forgotten that. Yeah, four digits.
That's pretty impressive now. I think they're up to a lot more. I don't remember what.
Hundreds of thousands, yeah. I'm sure, or close to a million, I'm sure, by now.
Yeah, that's great. Very cool. So then from FedEx, you went on to another career. So kind of talk about that. How did you end up doing that?
Well, I was at FedEx for 25 years, and FedEx had never done a reduction in force. And I worked on a project there in 2003, where we looked at how could we be more efficient. And I just turned 50. Also a breast cancer survivor, so I'd had breast cancer. And I'd worked all my life, even when I was in high school, I had a little typing job. So I was looking to, not to do something differently, but to move away from corporate America. My fear is, because I was a breast cancer survivor, is post-retirement health. And when FedEx came up with this buyout plan, it fit me. Particularly, I was an officer, so there was a different plan for officers, but you had to be 50, and I was just over that wire. So it worked well for me, and it included post-retirement. It included health care until I could be bridged to retirement, and then upon retirement, I had post-retirement health, because I was one of those early employees when post-retirement health was still being offered and the old pension plan. So the stars kind of lined up for me as a time to go. Now, when I left FedEx, I didn't leave FedEx to go do anything. Literally, I said, I'm going to sit at Starbucks and watch other people go to work. And sitting at Starbucks was one of my favorite things to do, sit there and read the paper or read. I like to do that. And I did that maybe for 3 or 4 months. I went to work for my church as the media manager. And like many nonprofits, you never get fired from church, so I had to fire myself from that. But it was a good experience, too, to see what was going on behind the scenes and to help implement the screens in the church, for example. That was new. That was interesting, too. But I was sitting at Starbucks one Saturday morning after being at the gym and read about this company called Lenny's that had been sold from the original owner, whose name was Lynn Moore, to George Alvard, someone I knew from his work in hospitality near the airport. And my daughter, Jana, who was a student at Rhodes College, had also mentioned Lenny's to us prior to this time. So there was a connection when I read about it. So it piqued my interest.
And then how did you end up going into business with Lenny's, owning Lenny's?
When I first read about the change, I really was more interested in being an investor than a franchisee. Not quite sure how I actually got to be the franchisee, possibly because one of the stores that they had for sale at the time was in Oxford, Mississippi, my hometown. This would be one of the things I would advise. Don't make a decision to purchase a business or get involved in a business for that reason, because it's in your hometown when you live 100 miles away. That's not a good reason to purchase a business, but it sounded good. It sounded like, hey, I'll be in Oxford all the time. Let me start with that one. And it was a good decision, but the Lenny's, like quick service restaurants, have a lot of cash involved. Nobody manages your cash like you manage your cash, and you have to always keep an eye on it. We bought the one in Oxford in 2005, and shortly after that, the one at the airport became available. And I partnered with a young man who had been a franchisee for some time and had other Lenny's that he owned. But there was some reluctance on his part to take that risk. And so my family ended up owning most of the airport, having a higher percentage of the ownership at the airport. And then we went together with Marlon, who was my partner at the time, and bought into some of the other stores that he had. So we ended up owning 10 stores here in Memphis, 3 in Nashville, and just kind of various, it's kind of buying and selling, somewhat like the stock market, you know, you buy this one, sell that one, for various reasons.
And for those who don't know, how would you describe Lenny's?
Well, having been a franchisee for 15 years, I mean, we've gone through various life cycles, I would say, and various owners. Lenny's is a quick service restaurant with sub sandwiches. As I said, it was started by Lynn Moore, Lynn and his wife were from Philadelphia, the Philly cheesesteak. So there are hot sandwiches and cold sandwiches, but the signature sandwich is the beef Philly. There's also chicken Philly. And when they started the business here, they wanted a Philly cheesesteak, a Philadelphia-style Philly cheesesteak here in Memphis. And that's kind of how it got started. But they're also cold sandwiches, and the meat's all sliced while you wait. Meat and cheese is sliced. There are cookies and bread baked daily, fresh. So the focus is on fresh and healthy.
Does your bread qualify as bread?
It is real bread, yes. It is real bread, stretched and baked right there, yes. It's the real thing.
One of the things about Lenny's and restaurants and that style of restaurant is that employees, and you've mentioned the fact that you need to have good management and be there because of the cash, but how do you find your best employees? What did you do to keep them?
And I think early on, and that has definitely changed now, I think everybody out there listening to this will say, yeah, an employee today is not the same as an employee was 15 years ago in terms of the caliber or the level of integrity or the work ethic and that kind of thing. So early on, we had mostly young people who were just excited because it was a new concept, too, a reasonably new concept, started in 1999, 98, 99. So it was exciting time, a fun time. You had college students, high school students, whereas now it's turned into a lot of the people that we have are actually working there. This is their prime job. Word of mouth in this business is good. Word of mouth from a good employee is a good reference for this business. And certainly we advertise, we run ads, we post. And you almost just luck upon good employees. And another thing is, if I go to some other quick service restaurant or any restaurant and I get great service, or I'm a person who helps me, does a great job, that's a good source too, if you can entice that person to come work. I mean, it's not something I'm going to advertise stealing employees, but that's probably one of the best sources because you already have an idea of how that person operates.
And I've also heard you speak and that you're willing to take a chance on people maybe that... You want to talk a little bit about that?
I will say, because I'm not relying on Lenny's to pay my utility bill every month, we can afford to be more flexible with the turnover or taking a chance on someone who may not work out. And I'd say 50% of the time that's the case, if not more. Turnover is very high in this business. So we've had people who've had criminal records, people who don't have the education, or people also who just don't have the vision. They've never been able to see that they could do anything, that they come to work. We try to encourage them, yeah, you could be the manager of the store, you could own the store, or you could own several stores. Or when somebody comes to work for us, we don't expect, necessarily desire, that people stay there forever. Just want you to be able to, if you're in school, to get you through school, or to get motivated to go do whatever it is you want to do and become another tax-paying citizen. That's from my perspective, because if you're not paying taxes, then probably I'm paying them for you. Just trying to get everybody to be self-supporting and productive. That starts with having a vision and believing that you can do that. A majority of our employees come from homes and backgrounds where they may not have had anybody who's ever gone to college, who's even been expected to do anything other than what they're doing now, work at an hourly job, get your first paycheck or second paycheck, and then go find another job, or until that runs out, go find another job. So little by little, I think we do make a difference in our community in terms of our employees. And all employees, all of our employees are not like that for sure, but there are a lot of employees who just need a little bit of motivation and somebody to believe in them and someone to give them a second chance. And that's the other part, giving a second chance or a third chance. We do that, we can afford to do that. And unfortunately, we've probably given some people too many chances. My son is James Kelly, runs the business, and he and I have different opinions about how many chances you actually do give people. Because sometimes you just know immediately, it's just no matter what you do, it's not going to work out. And that's what you need to do, is deal with that quickly.
So he's the softie?
Sometimes on people, and particularly people his age, the answer is they're different now. You're old school, older school.
How many people are employed across all the franchises?
Well, the ones that I own, and we only own five now, though we're still the largest franchisee in the Lenny's system, we would have about 75 people.
But then you also have other restaurants also.
Yes, I'm a partner in Wimpy's Burgers and Fries. In fact, we just opened our fourth location yesterday in Bartlett at Appling and Highway 64.
Cool, I did not know that.
What else do you do?
Well, I am on a couple of corporate public boards, private board here, Buckman Labs here in Memphis, Hattie Lou Theater, and Methodist Hospital boards.
As you consider buying or selling the franchises or investing in other startups or other businesses, what's the process that you take yourself through in making those decisions?
Well, first, for now, anything I do is for someone else in my family. I've got to the point I said, any dollar I make now, somebody else is going to spend that for me. But that's okay, because that's how really I got into Lenny's in the first place, because as I said, I had no intentions to do anything else. But I wanted to create a legacy for my family, for my two kids, my son and daughter, and others in the family too, primarily so that education, their ability to get an education would never be contingent upon whether they could financially afford to do so or not. That's one of the things I look at too when I'm invested in. And of course, there's a little bit of competitiveness. You certainly want to invest in something that's going to make you some money and make a lot of money. You want to be say, hey, I bought this stock. I bought it when it was $2. I bought Amazon when it was $2. And now look at it. But that's what you want to say. That doesn't always happen. It also has some community aspects too. How does it help our community, our city? Will it make a difference in somebody's life? But again, I will say, you know, any investments, you really got to have some amount of return. So that return percentage might be different depending on other aspects that might come along with it. If you're going to invest in something that you know is going to lose money, you may as well just make a contribution to a charity. So that's something you consider too. Do I have some expertise, or am I partnering with somebody who has some expertise? And do I believe in the person that I may be partnering with? Because I've made some small investments with people that had an idea, it seemed reasonable, but they were also motivated, and I've lost on some of those too. May never see that money again. But the other thing is, make an investment that you could afford to lose if it doesn't come to fruition.
So there are some advantages to owning a franchise, because you have a platform behind you, you have the experience of the larger company. Do you see any other advantages to being a franchisee? And then, did you run the franchises different than other franchisees? I'm just curious.
Other advantages, certainly you got the marketing, the name recognition, because there are many of them around the country, certainly in Memphis, with Memphis being the headquarters, corporate headquarters for Lenny's. So you see quite a few here, and you see them in other places too. So you've got that name recognition. Secondly, you've got other people who do exactly what you do, other franchisees. So you have people you can call on if you've got a problem, a unique problem, or what you may think is unique to you. But when you start talking to your peers, that may or may not be the case. So you're not the only person on point to solve every issue that comes up. So those would be a couple of other advantages. And of course, having proven techniques and processes that work, that we already know work.
And did you bring any innovation to the table as a franchisee?
If it is, it would be probably more of a focus on the numbers and making sure that you're capturing your numbers, you're tracking your numbers. I haven't designed an EKG sandwich or anything like that, a signature sandwich. I was on the advisory council, the franchise advisory council, for many years at Lenny's. So certainly challenges to some of the ideas, particularly in marketing and in my background, marketing people don't always bring the numbers. So, hey, this is a great idea to do, something to do. The financial people then say, well, where's the benefit? How much is sales going to increase? How are we going to measure whether it's a good idea or not? And oftentimes marketing people don't get to that point. It's just, hey, let's do this. I think that's something with Lenny's too, because we try a lot of different marketing things, limited time offers, but sitting on the front end, how are we going to know whether this is successful or not? So, and you've got to set those goals on the front end. So probably more my financial acquisition would be probably the part I play to the puzzle, added to the puzzle.
What was the biggest challenge you had when you were growing the business?
People, getting employees. It's still the biggest challenge now. It's the people that interact with our guests. So it doesn't matter how I want my guests to be treated or we know is the right thing to do. And coming from FedEx, people serve as profit. So people is number one. That's what I grew up on. As a consumer, I mean, I know how I want to be treated, but I have very high standards because of my time at FedEx. But it's the employees, our teammates who have to make that happen, who have to make the guest feel that they've gotten the service that they paid for. Oftentimes you get employees, and particularly younger employees now, if you text them your order, or if you text them, we'd probably get much better service. They're not necessarily the big social beings in terms of being able to talk and communicate and really make somebody feel well. But I was down at my stores yesterday to order something, and there's this young man named Cameron there, and I had not met him. I heard of him, but I had not met him. And just his demeanor, his smile, or his, yes, ma'am, that's something, yes, ma'am. I mean, something you don't hear much anymore, and not that you should, but that's one of those things that make you stand out, that make people remember you, that gets you above the level of mediocrity. I was thinking, boy, he has a lot of potential. He has the relationship, I guess. The people, I would say, Pearson, that's still the biggest challenge.
And have you had any success stories from taking somebody that you thought needed some extra guidance and mentoring and then seeing them be successful? Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of employees. And when we had a lot more stores or a lot more employees, of course, and I ran into a young lady who said, oh, don't you remember me? I used to work at Spotswood store. What are you doing now? I'm in law school. So that person, she used that as a stepping stone. And then my partner in Wimpy's used to work for us as our director of operations, Jacob. And we found the Wimpy's location in South Haven. And that allowed him, as well as one of our other managers, to make investments with not having to bring money or any significant amount of money to the table, because you can form an LLC with nothing, basically with no dollars, if you have the ability to borrow money from the bank. So I think where I've helped people who are in the business or started their own businesses, perhaps with my financial ability to get loans, I'm not giving the money to them, but we can borrow the money, pay it back from the income, and then once paid back, of course, they have opportunity to make significant amounts of money if those businesses are successful. All cases related to the restaurants that have been successful. And there's a young man out at the airport saying similar thing that we partnered with. He's a manager out there, but he's also an investor and a partner in one of our businesses out at the airport.
So you've mentored others, but did you have any significant mentors along the way for you?
A couple, not necessarily on the entrepreneurial side. If it's anybody on the entrepreneurial side, it would be my grandmother who just really had to hustle. She was a maid. She made $15 a week, but she also would wash shirts, do laundry for the guys on campus. This is, 1950s, early 60s. Seems to remember something like for 15 cents a shirt. Wash the shirts, iron them. Of course, I couldn't spell that word entrepreneurial then. I didn't realize it looking back and said, hey, she did things that she had to do to add additional income. Rex Deloach, when I came out of Ole Miss, hired me into Deloitte. I was the first African-American on the professional staff there, one of few women that were there. And Rex was from Clarksdale, Mississippi, and he's still around. He's called me doing this COVID thing just to check up on me, but he was the partner in the office, and he's still kept tabs on me and what I'm doing. But he gave me that chance to even be in public accounting. I only got one offer from the Big Eight firms. I don't know that interview with all of them. I only got that one. I mean, I had some offers from corporate, but only one from, as I said, that's the place you want to go. And I only got an offer from one firm, and that was from him. So I will always give him the credit for getting me positioned and for kind of helping me maneuver through some of these things. Because, you know, on audits, you're going to different companies and in their offices. And I remember once he called me up and said, well, you know, we've got this firm. It's a firm here in Memphis. I don't know, union saying fine for them to do the audit, but they didn't want a black person in their office. So he had to call me up and tell me that. And then you kind of work through that. And that was social development for me. It could have been traumatic. It was not, but it's something I won't ever forget. I remember many conversations with Rex about that.
That's tough. You mentioned COVID, and it's kind of the elephant in the room. How has that affected your business?
Well, our street stores have done, year-over-year sales have done much better year-over-year, to our surprise. And I will say the two stores in the airport, we had to close them for 2 months because we're just tied to the passenger count there. And airport passenger count, I think, went down probably 90% there for a while. We closed both of our locations. We opened them back up in, I think, mid-July. But they're both doing probably only 40% of what they did the prior year. On the other end, the street stores have done very well. We do not have people coming in. We didn't open our dining rooms up. It's curbside delivery and pickup. They've done very well. We're going into a seasonality now where there's a downturn, but still year-over-year sales are in total on the four street stores are doing pretty well. So we're pretty blessed and very good with that. Somewhat surprised, too. Basically, we are, as from an employee perspective, we are totally back at our same level, just can't find enough people.
I was just going to say, what was the best advice that you were ever given? You said that you had the Rex Deloitte. I'm going to go back to that conversation. What's the best advice you ever got from somebody?
Well, this would have probably been from someone probably that I think was more actionable. I guess it was at FedEx. Judith Regala, who was a senior vice president there. I was in finance, accounting, always on the staff side, and that was to move to operations and not necessarily to take a lateral move. And I tell people that too. It's not always up, up, up. Sometimes you've got to go sideways to go up. I did move out of finance to be a director of publishing services. That's where we used to make the air bills. We did the print shop. We had manuals. I think most of all of that has been outsourced, probably not the manual writing, but a lot of that has been, I outsourced a lot of it. And it was there in that position, that's where I was when I became vice president of internal audit and quality reporting to Fred Smith at the time. So many people just take that as a negative. Why would I take a lateral move? That's something you need to think about when you think when you want to move up. There are other kinds of experiences that make you more rounded and also take away the opportunities that people have to say no. Well, you don't have operations experience. Well, yes, I do now. And the other one would be getting an MBA. I would say that too, getting that MBA.
Where'd you get your MBA?
At Vanderbilt.
I figured you did the weekend program.
I did the executive MBA program, yes.
Well, that's great. Very good. I did not know that about you. I thought I knew everything and learned something new every day. One thing about an entrepreneur is that you do have to always keep learning. What do you do now to keep learning and how do you keep up with the times?
Well, I do read. We talked about employees and people, and there's always a lot coming on. How do you get people? How do you keep your people happy? How do you motivate people? So there are industry publications and, of course, digital. There's something every day about something you need to know about what's going on, but also knowing what's going on in the competitive environment, quick service restaurants. Where are you moving to? What's happening digitally? What are customers, your guests, expecting now when they come into the store? For example, we are getting ready to move into Terminal B in the new part of the airport, and we're looking at how can we be COVID protected as much as we can, a COVID insulated. How can we have people either order from their tables or order at a kiosk or when they first step into the airport, place their order, and by the time they get to our location, their food's ready for them. But in no case not have to stand in line and bunch around a point-of-sale system to order. It is a lot of reading, observing when James or my daughter or our partner or I go in through airports, which I haven't done since March 12th. I haven't been on a plane since March 12th. Looking at how other people, other organizations, other restaurants handle that. And then, of course, as a franchisee, too, we also get it piped in from that perspective.
Do you have any advice you would give to people who are looking to start a company?
Know the reasons that you want to start a company. I'm kind of a methodical ABC kind of thinker, and I'll use an example of speaking to someone in the last 2 months who called me because she wanted to start her own company. And she had an idea of the company, but had not thought through beyond right now. So what's going to be the need for 6 months from now, 12 months from now? Are you willing to put in the time that's necessary to make the sacrifice? Do you have the finances to handle that? Do you have the credit strength for one to even get the finances, get the money if you don't already have the money? Thinking through those things, but the main thing is, why do you want to do this? Many people think working for yourself, you know, I've worked for so many companies and I'm tired of working for other people. I want to work for myself. All right, well, what does that mean? That means when there's shortage of money, that's you. That means when the employee doesn't show up, that's you. There are a whole lot of things that are involved. Anything that's missing, it comes back to you. Long hours. It means your family member is going to all expect to have a job. And some of them you probably don't want to. You can't afford to have them work for you. So just knowing the reasons would be first, not just jumping out there, hey, I think this is a great idea. And also knowing that why it may seem like it's lucrative, sometimes it's more lucrative than others, it's not always going to make you the rich person you think it does. Because I know we have many employees now. You may have, say you have $1,000 in sales today. Many employees think that $1,000 just goes straight into the owner's pocket. They discount their pay, the cost of food, the rent, and all of those things. So that's a misnomer, and you just got to really understand and do your research. And many people who do this, they have a great idea, but they don't want to deal with the administrative side of it, which is a downer for a lot of people, too. I guess I could do a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but just understanding why yourself and why you want to do this, first thing.
One of the very important things about being in business is that you have a succession or an exit strategy, and you've already kind of gone through that personally when you decided to leave FedEx. What advice would you give to somebody that's considering that it's time to exit a business?
So in my case, my son was always in the business, so mine was pretty obvious, but it's also hard to do that because you're talking about a different generation, and the way James does things, that's different than the way I do things. One, coming to grips with, if you are going to sell your business or if you're going to pass it down, either way, you're going to have to make sure you can give it up, that you can become hands-free. But I would say, first of all, having an exit strategy, having a succession plan. Don't get on your deathbed and then say, well, what's going to happen to the business? And I think many, many people don't want to think about that fact that they need an exit plan, or they're not comfortable with who would be the natural heir to the business, so therefore they don't do anything. If it's a family member or if you've designated somebody, so say start working with them early on. Identify them, start working with them. Now, the easy thing is to just leave this world and let two people here, you guys figure out who's going to do it, because I don't want to take on the responsibility of picking you over the other person, but that's not fair either. So I think the best thing is to get that person in the business, talk to them about what you would like to see, because knowing when she's gone, though, they're going to do whatever they want to do anyway. But trying to ensure some basics so that they would be successful and that they understand why you got into the business. If you have reasons other than just to make money, there may be other reasons. Try to ensure that your thoughts and desires to some extent can be carried out. But it probably won't matter once you're gone anyway. So there are many, many other things, too. That's one, I think, as I've talked to people, the uncomfortableness of identifying and then kind of easing out and letting the other person move in without comment.
There's the challenge right there.
So many entrepreneurs have a family business where there's multiple family members involved. Can you elaborate more about your son, James, how he got involved, what his role is?
Well, James went to Florida A&M, a historically black university, and got an MBA there, and he always wanting to kind of run his own business. He worked for ServiceMaster for, I think, a year and a half, which I think anybody coming into a family business or any business, you should kind of spend that time in corporate America to kind of solidify what you learned in school and see how that works. And it plays out in some business that's already operating where you're not trying to create policies and procedures. And then you also bring the best of what you learned there into your family business. As I said, that was one of the reasons I got into Eleni's was because I know that James had a desire. My daughter also was very interested in business, although she's a physician. So she's probably never going to make a sandwich again in her life, although she did spend some time early on working in the business. So he's always been in the business. And a real plus to that is that he and I have got to spend an awful lot of time together, some very happy times, some conflicted times, but also having that connection with this different generation has been good with him in the business too. And I think we've both grown as a result of that. And now I am trying my best to back away and disconnect as much as I can and let him do that. But sometimes you just see things, you say, no, this can't be like that. This is not going to work like that. Yeah.
How did you manage those conflicted times?
I had the background and the experience. So I remember sending a note to James and our young partner, and we were debating something, and I said, do you have this experience, that experience, not in the story? because I was comparing them to my decision versus how they were debating the situation. I was just basically saying, look, just forget it. You don't have the experience. You don't have the wisdom. This is going to go my way. But for the most part, you always try, whether you're in your own business, with family, anybody, leading or managing employees, you hope to lead them to assess the situation with all the pros and cons, because it could be that you are wrong, that the ultimate decision maker, you don't have all the information. So you try to talk through it or ask questions to help reveal the pluses and minuses so that you get to the best decision, or that they get to the decision that you've already made in the first place, or you already know is the right decision in the first place. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And if you really know that you know, there's no reason to spend the time making the wrong decision. And particularly as it relates to people, how people are treated, or your guest. Now, you can maybe afford to lose a little money by maybe buying something earlier than you think it should be bought, or leasing versus buying. But when it comes to your people and guests, you spend the time talking about it. But if you know the right answer, you know how to treat people and your guests right, then ultimately you have to kind of swoon in on that.
I have a very important question from this. Do you think that entrepreneurs are born or taught?
Actually, I think you need both. You have to have both. But I think it is important to be born with that spirit of can do. I'm going to make it happen. Creativity. Let me think differently. Let me just not sign up for whatever somebody tells me to do. And I think creativity is a big part of entrepreneurship. So in that regard, I think you're born in terms of the taught part. Okay, so I've got a great idea, but there's some guidelines. There's a way you got to implement this idea. And you don't always born with, how do I get financing? How do I set up my people policies and procedures? What am I going to do about technology? How do I know I need technology? So to me, those things are some of the top things. There are a lot of people with a lot of ideas, but how do you get from your idea to a paying customer? I think it takes both. But I think if you can go to school and say, I've got a degree in entrepreneurship, if you don't have the drive, you don't have the creative ideas, or to say, yeah, I know I may have to work till midnight, or I may have to work 24 hours. To me, that's something that you're born with, that kind of push.
Talking about drive and creative ideas, I think you have a unique experience because you reported directly to Fred Smith, who started and still runs FedEx, and then you migrated into your own entrepreneurial journey. Any stories to share about Fred Smith and what makes him so unique in his role and experience?
All the business things and business accomplishments, I think you all know. Fred was a great communicator from the people side of the house, and able to lead people and to motivate people to make the other things happen. And maybe an aspect that I don't think you necessarily read a whole lot about. You read about all the innovation and all the ideas and all the successes and all of those, but that would be one of the things. And I agree with all the other adjectives too, but I just found him to be a really great communicator and motivator. I mean, in terms of, I remember we used to have FX TV, where he'd get on FX TV and everybody could see him speaking, or other members of management too, or other people. They didn't have to be management. And so everybody was hearing the same thing at the same time, because the company was growing so fast. I think that was really critical that that happened, versus I heard this and I tell Pearson, she tells you. And, you know, by the time it gets to the 10th person, it's a whole different story. And just the fact that at the time I was there, it was Fred. You didn't hear, well, Mr. Smith said this, Mr. Smith said that. It was, well, Fred this and Fred that. It was just that kind of camaraderie. And he created, I always use the analogy, a bunch of us started kindergarten together, and you grow up and grow up. And eventually now you graduate from high school and you go to different places where people retired, people left and went to different companies. And so I thought he was a great principal in keeping us all in support of our school and our school mascot.
That's a great description.
That really is. Speaking of Fred Smith and the great company that he built, Memphis is kind of known for that, for having different businesses that were born here. Why do you think that is?
I think about, why do people come to Memphis? I think a lot of people want to stay in Memphis, want to be in Memphis. We like Memphis, although this is not my hometown. You grew up here. So in order to do that, perhaps there are not a lot of FedExes or enough FedExes around to accommodate people who want to be in Memphis. So then you create perhaps your own businesses, or you see a need and you said, or because we do have the FedEx is here, for example, you can be here and sell to the world too. Logistical capital. So Memphis creates a lot of opportunities to be here because you want to be here. And many people can't find, or either they're not equipped to do the professional jobs that an IP or FedEx have here, or Medtronics or whoever. So you create your own opportunities for whatever reason. They may not be able to or may not be hired for that. You create your own opportunities, particularly when you talk about a lot of restaurants and entertainment places, hospitality kinds of places. So I don't know exactly the answer to that question. And I thought about it. That would be one reason I would think. I want to be in Memphis. Perhaps I don't want to work for somebody else, or I can't work for somebody else. I'm a great chef. Let me start my own business, or, you know, I've got another creative idea.
One other thing that I know about you is how much you give back. That's so important to you, and I know that you've been very active at Ole Miss and giving back to that community. Can you talk some about your giving back to the community and your philanthropic activities?
I know where I came from. And so I would tell people, when you come to me with your sad story, I can always top your sad story, because I wasn't born with anything. Grew up in a house where you could look through the wall and get the weather report because there were holes in the wall. So I know you can move up. For me, education was a real key. And education is probably my number one philanthropic initiative, that and health, in terms of how I give. Health because I'm a breast cancer survivor, but education because I just think that is so critical. I would tell people, never let people use education or the fact that you don't have a degree as an excuse for not hiring you, promoting you. That's an easy excuse for somebody to use. Either you have a bachelor's degree or you don't, if that's what's required. Either you have a master's or you don't. And if you don't, you can't debate that. Go get the education, get the piece of paper. They're not going to give you a test once you say, I have a bachelor's degree. You're not going to have to take a test or anything, but get the legitimate piece of paper.
Check the box.
Right, right. And if you don't check the box, it's so easy for me to say, Jay, you know, I'm sorry. I'm thinking, I really want to hire Pearson anyway. You don't have a degree, but you've been doing the job forever. Pearson's a Johnny come lately, and I want to hire her. But you don't have a degree. She does. So
okay, it's nice seeing you. I'll be.
It's very easy to use. And I've seen that. I've seen that many times with people where it is an easy excuse. And I tell people that frequently. But a community is never going to be any better than its least educated person, particularly here in Memphis. And we have so much potential, but we have so much poverty or uneducated people that we cannot get a handle on. And I just think about what this community or any community could be with a different educational level. And I think the opportunities are out there. But as I said, with my family, I didn't want that to be an excuse, not being able to get an education. And for anybody who's motivated, I would not want that to be an excuse for any child coming out of high school. So, you know, I have endowed two four-year scholarships at Ole Miss, and I have two more that are deferred scholarships. And I always like to do four-year scholarships versus you graduate from high school, you get the scholarship, but then what happens in your second year? And I think that's where we lose people and becomes more critical. I just think education is so important. It is the key to success, to my success, whatever that success is.
You also created a nonprofit.
Philanthropic Black Women of Memphis.
Yes. So I'd love to hear more about that, because I think it's such a great thing you're doing.
Well, this is a small, simple thing. We started, I believe, in 2007. There are nine Black women. We just kind of pool our small money together. Instead of doing a little here and a little there, we give like $5,000 grants, which is the max, to smaller charitable organizations where $5,000 makes all the difference in the world. You normally is to fund a specific program that they want to get funded. So they've just been really delighted. We've done a couple of times Booker T. Washington's girls basketball team to help them get to some competition that was out of town. For example, we've done Boys and Girls Club. I'm thinking about the place, I can't think of the name of the place down in Midtown where they raise gardens for the community and that kind of thing. So just a myriad of different kinds of things that we've contributed up to $5,000 for. Alzheimer's, we did something for the caregivers. They had a program they were trying to do for caregivers. So you just know it makes a small difference. And I guess it's just like being a teacher. And I tell my friends who are teachers, you'll never know when you've made a difference in a child's life. Sometimes you do, they come back, but more often than not, you don't know. And the same thing here, $5,000 may not be a whole lot for us. For somebody, it makes all the difference in the world.
So racial equality has become a priority for many people in 2020. Do you have any thoughts to share about how we can improve our society?
Well, you said this was 30 minutes, right? Let's roll up my sleeves here. I certainly have a lot of thoughts. And I would start with saying, just as I said about education, our community and most communities are never going to be as good as they can be when there is racial discrimination, when there are outright racist that choose to hold people down or can justify, rationalize treating people differently, most of whom they don't even know. It's no different than treating anybody different or anything different based on ignorance. So I think it's terribly important that we, one, face up to it and get a understanding on what racism means. A lot of people don't understand racism, or I'm not a racist, but you don't ever know that until you're in the other person's shoes, a recipient of what is perceived to be racism. You've got diversity of color, diversity of gender, but diversity of ideas. Different genders, different colors come with different ideas. And those different ideas, in my opinion, or from a business perspective, when you get to what's in it for me, you're going to come out with better solutions to issues, better ways to reach the masses. But the social unrest that we're going through now, it is hard for me to believe that anyone, and I know a lot of people have justified and rationalized that compared to having a great economy. For example, I'll vote for the economy and I'll forget about the racism or the racial injustice or the lack of attention to that. So that I can't understand, and I wrestle with that. I wrestle with the question of everybody who voted for the other person, does that mean they're racist? That's a long conversation and, quite frankly, a painful conversation. And I've dealt with that, obviously, my whole life. And I've been very blessed to be where I am compared to most people who look like me. Who's to say I couldn't have been farther along, or somebody else couldn't have been farther along had there not been the obstacles? And then there have been obstacles. I mean, I could go through, well, this happened, that happened. But you maneuver around those, you make the best of it, you pray a lot. Obviously, I was in the right place at the right time in many cases. But I do also think talking, and one of the things I find is the reluctance to talk, maybe not reluctance to talk, but the challenge in talking about something that's so raw. Friends who've been hurt because I think they're a racist. And they've said that, you know, I think you think I'm a racist. And that's painful to them. But we generally don't talk about those things. So it starts with conversations, and in my opinion, starts with talk.
One of the reasons I wanted to ask this question.
Yeah, I noticed it wasn't on the list.
What excites you about Memphis right now?
This is a bright day outside and the potential for brighter days and the possibilities, I guess, to use President-elect Biden's word, possibilities. I think there are a lot of folks who want to get it together, want us to figure it out. And we are moving, but I think eventually we're going to figure this out quicker, not better necessarily than we have, but quicker than we have. And there are a lot of pockets of things that are going on to make things better. I just wish we could get the masses going. I like Memphis. I can't think of any other place I'd want to live.
Thank you for sharing all of that. I really appreciate it. And there's a lot of discussion that needs to happen. And I think that Edith Kelly Green should be right on top of that because people listen. I want you to tell us something that people would be surprised to know about you.
That I have a great sense of humor. I'm an accountant. You know, I'm a 1+1=2 people person. And I'm usually come across very kind of serious. I'm to the point. But I do have a great sense of humor, and I like to exercise that whenever I can, but I don't do it often enough, don't laugh often enough, but trust me, I do.
Well, and you also said exercise, so why don't you tell me, I know you've accomplished a goal that's pretty cool.
Well, I guess that gets back to my straightforwardness. I started running 10, 12 years ago, 2007 or so. My daughter and another friend of mine challenged me to run with the running group Sisters in Motion. So I did that, and I tended to like running. I'd never really run of any significance before. So I think in 2007, I ran the St. Jude 5K. 2008, I ran the full marathon. I just started liking running, and also as it's tied to health and being healthy. Just mentioned that I'm an accountant, so as being an accountant, random running didn't make sense to me. I needed a plan, you know. And
a spreadsheet.
And actually, I do have a spreadsheet on these 50 states that I've run with my time, my bib number, and all of that. But I also reflected back that when I was seventh grade, I got a C in geography. So I said, if I'm going to run half marathons, why don't I run one in every state? And that way I'll get to see every state and maybe redeem myself from that C. 2 years ago, October 2018, in Des Moines, Iowa, I ran my 50th, well, it wasn't my 50th, it's probably my 75th half, but it was in the 50th state. Since then, I've run one in South America, ran in Antarctica back in January. Of course, North America, so I've got three of the continents. I'm not saying that I'm going to do those, but that was a very good experience. Met a lot of folks, good people. Runners are good people. Got to see every state, and there were a lot of wow states, too.
That's awesome.
That is really cool. What was your favorite race?
Well, Florida and California always get races, but surprisingly, Fargo, North Dakota. I had never done a race that started in a inside. It started in the Fargo Dome, and it ended in the Fargo Dome. Now, this was in May, but think about it, North Dakota. And I guess they do this because you never know what the weather is going to be. And actually, it was a weekend. They said Friday night there was a whole family 5K run, and then they had something that morning, Saturday morning, and something else. So it was celebrating the whole weekend, and a lot of folks, they were out in the neighborhoods, came out and cheered on. It was a big thing, Fargo, and I had never been to Fargo. You know, we've all seen that movie, but that's about the extent of it. So that was a fun race. And the other one, not so much the race, it was just being in Montana. And you say Big Sky, and driving through, and you come over a hill, and exactly, it's a big blue sky. It was amazing. It was amazing.
That's a great country, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Lots to see.
So one thing we like to ask all our interviewees, what are three things besides family, faith, that you couldn't live without?
It's interesting you do it at the F's, because that's kind of how I do my focus on family and faith. And fun would be one, friends would be another, and one of my other F's is finance, because that's how you kind of handle the fun and the family. But I think that with the faith and the family, those five F's to me all help keep you balanced and focused. Now, in terms of living without, would be M&M, peanuts, the chocolate stuff, but to be more specific. But I think trying to be a balanced person and trying to keep all things in focus, the faith to me is always the ultimate. When all these other things fail, the faith is what's still there, what keeps you going. And of course, family and friends would be the next one. And then I think everybody deserves to have fun too, whatever that means to you. And you describe your own fun. I don't know if I got three there, but you also, on the finance side, I mean, it's not the most important thing to have, but that helps you take care of the other things and perhaps make the world a better place by giving back to others and trying to pull other people along with you.
This has just been so much fun. I knew it would be, and I just always love being with you. It was a great interview. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for
Thank you all for the opportunity. It has been fun. Got to know you two better, a little bit better too.
So, and if you want to find out anything more about Edith Kelly Green, it'll be in our show notes. So we really appreciate this, and have a great day.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to our interview with Edith Kelly Green.
If you want to learn more about Edith Kelly Green, you can find a link to the Society of Entrepreneurs profile in our show notes. Thanks for listening to Entrepreneurial Insights. If you enjoyed this conversation, feel free to share with your friends or colleagues. You can find more episodes or subscribe anywhere that you listen to your favorite podcasts. And of course, reviews are always welcome and appreciated. You can also check us out online at entrepreneurialinsightspodcast.com or bluffcitybusiness.com.